Welcome everyone to the first in Center and Lyseth, and I think might be the only hearing held today on the Capital Investment Conference Committee, and appreciate everybody taking the time to come down. Just a couple comments before we get too far into it. It seems to me that if it's Senator Langseth and I are in somewhat different positions. Senator Langseth is able to set the target for the Senate. I'm not for the House. We don't have that. I don't have that ability. That would lie with the Speaker. And there has been no agreement between the Speaker, at least that I've heard, other than to stay under $1 billion in all funds. So I wasn't sure what we would do on the first meeting. It seemed kind of, first of all, pointless to meet if we didn't know what the eventual goal was going to be, at least in terms of dollars. And so didn't call a meeting for a while, and it seemed to be an awful lot of people that had interest in meeting, and I had a couple suggestions that we ought to meet and do a side-by-side, and from my view anyway, some staff, that seemed to be pointless, since I think everybody, I thought, knew what was in the bills. So I thought, well, what would we really do? And so then I got thinking about it. I think everybody knows that the bill is going to be at least $900 million in geo bonding, if not larger, or at least over $800 million. And so as I looked at it, and one of the things that I talked to people as they came and talked about their priorities and things they wanted to get in the bill, and I thought, well, what is it that we think we can agree on? Where's the common areas, things that the Senate and House both think is a reasonable place to start? So I thought we would take a shot at that. In fact, I think it was Senator Pappas who last year suggested that, and I resisted it, and I'll have to say she was right and I was wrong, that maybe this isn't a bad format to go. We'll at least try it. The other suggestion she had was go in the back room and cut the deal, and Senator Pappas had to try that, and that didn't work out so well. So we'll try this. We'll try the modified Pappas approach, we'll call it, of at least seeing if we can construct a bill and come to some agreements. And so I think in the areas where I think that there's not a lot of differences, at least that I don't think there are, is higher education, both the University of Minnesota and MinSCU, roads, bridges, and transit. Maybe not all the projects, but I think a significant number of them are. We think the Senate number on flood mitigation is superior to ours. I believe the Senate likes our WIF number. So not very exciting stuff, but I think it's stuff that we can agree to. And the interesting thing is, if at the end of the day we do come out of here with some type of agreement of a place to at least start, we're probably north of $500 million. And that gives, I think, people a little perspective on the work that lies ahead of us. And then what I did is I thought about that, and I kind of went through in each category and thought about, well, I don't know where the dollars will fall. I think if you go through and you think about things like human services and the Vets Home Board and additional money in deed and housing and PCA and the zoo, this gets to $800 million in a heartbeat, and that's before we have done some of the local projects and things of that nature. And so when people would, I've heard a lot of people would come and say, boy, it's only $600,000 in a billion-dollar bill. Well, reality, if you take the kind of common things, the infrastructure, the higher ed, the wastewater infrastructure, you're going to be over $1 billion or over $800 million in a big hurry. And so what I think we're going to come down to eventually is having $150 or $200 million and about $1.8 billion of requests. And so that's going to be a difficult challenge. So I don't pretend to think that the rest of it's going to be this easy, but we'll certainly try to see how far we can get. I think before we call anybody else up, Senator Langseth, I believe, has a comment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, first of all, I would like to commend the House. I think you put together a very good proposal. We think we put together a very good proposal, and when you look at the votes in both the House and the Senate, I think the percentages were
almost the same. So I think with goodwill on both sides, we should be able to work this out. Now, it isn't quite as good, it isn't quite as easy as some people might think. If you, we added the cumulative total between the three proposals, it was $1.3 billion. So it isn't a matter of the House going down a little bit and the Senate going down a little bit. It's a matter of there's going to be, you know, over $300 million that's in one of the three proposals that aren't going to survive. So it is more difficult than I think meets the eye. Did you want to go kind of through the bill and let people make comments as in the different categories? It seemed like people should be able to mention some of their high priorities or something they may be against or whatever.
Right. Senator, not today. I thought most of the people, I think, in the room know that. If it's an area that we're going to try to reach an agreement on, I think that would be useful. But other than that, I personally don't see a lot of value to the side-by-side. You know, at the end of the day, you'll have the gavel, and if you think that that's useful when you call a meeting, that's certainly at your discretion.
Well, I guess there's just a couple of different areas I would like to meet, general areas I would like to meet some comments on that are very important parts of the bill before we really get started. So if I could do that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure, if you'd like to make those general comments.
In the Minsky area, as you can see, there's a large list there, and quite a lot of money. Now, remember, you're talking about 53 campuses, and I've heard people talk about, you know, HEPR versus the projects, and I just went through the list here to find out, and I found out that most of the list is actually asset preservation. If you look at it, it talks about renovation all the way down here. So the vast majority of the bill of that proposal for Minsky is simply fixing up what we got. With the HEPR, it tends to go for smaller repairs, and with the project, it tends to go for complete renovations. Just to give you an idea of a couple of things I know about it, in McLean Hall at Moorhead State, the construction dollars are in here. That was built in 1932. That'd be, 74 years ago. And it's a beautiful old building, but it needs total renovation. And then later on in the planning, it's got Lohman Hall, which was also built in 1932, 74 years ago, and planning money for doing it in 2 years. And if you go down that list, you will find out that most of the money and most of the projects are for renovation or asset preservation. I just wanted to point that out as far as Minsky is concerned. I would, since it's a subject that I'm very familiar with, I was going to talk about the flood request. We've got $24 million. You know, the governor had $9 million, and then we had a near disaster up there just recently. The governor was up there twice. I was with him one time, and he basically said, after he'd been up there, that he thought my numbers were what we should go with, which is $24 million. And, a lot of people have been watching this flood control thing for 10 years now, or 9 years, since the 97 flood. And I think wondering, when are you ever going to get completed up there? East Grand Forks, which has, I think, has received $67 million in state funds so far, and about twice as much federal, we can wrap it up this year with about $4 million. So we get that very expensive project done and off the table. Breckenridge is very close. As soon as they get the federal money, $3-4 million of state money, we'll have that. Crookston, we got a lot longer to go. But I think to really do the job, and this affects the chairman's area as well, down at Austin, Albert Lee, I think to really do the job there, we need to have something in the middle 20s, this bonding cycle, and probably two more bonding cycles. Then I think it would drop off quite sharply, because I know northwestern Minnesota would be in very good shape at that time. But I know I've had some people say, well, is this endless or what? But it's, and I'd like to say, too, that this was the second or third worst flood in history, and we escaped it very, very well. It was very close to being a big disaster. But the things that we have done and the money we have spent, I think paid for itself this spring alone. So I did just want to mention that. I don't know if there's anything that you, Mr. Chairman, or anybody else wants to point out, but
those two areas I kind of wanted to point out as areas that I think needed some clarification.
Thank you for that clarification. I think I was going to go maybe in a little bit different order, but I understand the commissioners here, Commissioner Engelson, maybe you want to make a couple comments. I'm told you have to leave us and won't be staying for the riveting part of the meeting that is forthcoming. So, you know, if you want to make a couple comments about, where you think the governor's going, if you could give us a list also of things that the governor says, yes, I'll support that if it makes it through, that'd be really helpful if we had that, list. You have that, Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I don't have that with me today. But
Could you bring that to the next meeting, maybe talk to the governor and say, kind of give us kind of an inkle? Or should we assume that he doesn't support them?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I appreciate your giving me the chance to just make a couple of comments here about the governor's interest in the Bonney Bill. I know, Mr. Chair and Senator Langs, that you both talked a little bit about the overall size of the bill, and in conversations with the governor, he thinks actually that both of the House and Senate bills are a little high in terms of the bonding, and yet he doesn't want to give some particular kind of number, but his preference, because obviously this is all subject to some negotiation, but his preference would be to have a overall total bill size, all funds, in the $960 million range. Further, Mr. Chair, if I could just make a couple of comments about the overall size and what this means, and the importance of kind of looking at the debt capacity and the way that we try to manage within the guidelines is to reserve some capacity for future obligations or future needs. And what we attempt to do is present to you a six-year plan. So there are all kinds of projects and needs that span the next several years. And so we think it's important to reserve some capacity in the future for needs that we know are ongoing needs over the next several years, and also for some of the things that might be unknown. And then, Mr. Chair, if I might just make a couple of comments about concerns that the governor has about things that he considers to be broader statewide priorities that are not adequately funded in either the House or Senate bill. And one is the North Star project. And I think he has communicated some concerns about the overall size and the need for $60 million in that project. In addition, Mr. Chair,
Commissioner, on that project, have you finished up the negotiations there with Burlington Santa Fe?
Mr. Chair, I am not exactly sure of the status. Maybe someone from the department can respond to the status.
I haven't seen it in the news or anything, and so I thought maybe you had.
I don't have information on that, Mr. Chair. Sorry. And Mr. Chair, another thing that I'd like to talk a little bit about is the Faribault Prison Project as a priority that is not adequately funded in either the House or Senate bill. And Mr. Chair, Commissioner Fabian is here, and I think that I have heard some of the rationalization for not including funding of the Faribault bill in the bonding bill, and I think it would really be important to attempt to dispel some of the things that might not be accurate in terms of the state's need for prison capacity in the future, and so certainly Commissioner Fabian is here and could speak to that. Just a couple of other things I would mention that the governor has raised concern about is the housing funds being inadequate in his view in the House and Senate bills, as well as funding for the
Mr.
Jews.
Chair, we got his numbers, $25 million.
Sorry, I meant in the House bill. Sorry, Senator Langsa.
We funded the homeless veterans, and that's another story. Okay, go ahead.
And then the only other project I was going to mention, Mr. Chair, is the zoo as a concern that the governor has. Again, in one or the other bill, these are some things that he thinks are important to include closer to the levels that he had recommended in his budget.
Mr. Chair, is that in a priority order?
Pardon?
Is that in a priority of what you'd like to see us address them, or random? Or?
Yeah, it's okay. Pretty random, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scogin?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Anderson, when you mentioned the North Star, my spreadsheet says that the governor requested $60 million Well, the Senate is proposing 60 million. Were you referencing the House at 50 million?
Yes.
All right. Thank
yes.
you.
Are there other questions of the commissioner? We certainly thank you for taking the time to come down and relate to us the message from the governor. If you could relay to him the fact that we'd like to know those projects that he said he'd support if they're in the final bill, so we know which ones those are. That would also be helpful as we, as I know that drives the speaker crazy, is, you know, people come in his office and say, well, the governor will support us if it's in the bill. And so if we get that list of what that is, that would be very helpful. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Ingerson, have you gotten any sense in terms of that flexibility for future investment that you were talking about, leaving some room within the cap? Is there anything that the bond houses look at in terms of whether we leverage to the cap, or which is self-imposed, granted, but leverage to the cap, or whether we leave some flexibility within our self-imposed regulations?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, I think that the important thing to the rating agencies is that we have a guideline and we have the discipline to sort of manage within the guideline. I think that, you know, the broader concern that I'm expressing is one that, you know, we're looking to certainly fall closer within the guideline, but also recognize the importance of funding the state priorities. I mean, if we are moving up to the total capacity at this point and we fund a lot of projects that may not be high priorities and we've got other higher priority state projects, it limits our ability to do some of the things that we might need to do in the future, whether that be, you know, I guess I particularly note the Faribault Prison at this point, because certainly that's a major project and we have a lot of demands on our existing prison capacity, and those are things that it looks to us like will only be growing in the future.
Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think Commissioner Ingerson, I wanted to thank you for bringing that concern forward. I think obviously as we look at what we're doing here today, and we also look at some of the projects that we have here, are not just fully funded, they're phased projects. I do appreciate that you brought that kind of and put it on the table for us, and I hope that we'll all give consideration to that piece, because I do think it's important.
Thank you.
Mr.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, I think according to that 3% cap, and I think I got to figure that what we allocated this year for debt service came to 2.7%. So I think that we do have some leeway there. But I think according to the figures you gave us, next year, if we did the 3% cap this year, next year we would be allowed $135 million. And if there was something like the Faribault Prison or something, obviously that would be well within our ability to do that next year if that timing factor became important.
We might just have a problem to add to that. We might just have a problem at the rate that we keep spending the supposed surplus in the next biennium in both bodies. I think that some of these bills pass, I think we're going to have problems coming up the general fund for anything, but that's another story. Commissioner, do you want to comment on
Mr. Chair, Senator Langseth, I might just note that, yes, in fact, our estimates of our capacity assume that there'll be often an emergency bonding bill in the off-year session. And I think that, you know, I think we certainly know about the needs that we're going to have in the next few years in terms of capacity at the Faribault Prison, for example. And, you know, our preference would be to fund that project now as a known need and to look at other kinds of things that may come up between now and next session and reserve any capacity for an emergency bill next session for some of the unknowns that may yet occur.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, could you talk a little bit about the governor's recommendation for higher ed? Because I see that he recommended about half what MNSU had requested and just a little bit more than half what the university had requested. Seems to me higher education, obviously I believe that, is pretty important to our state.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I think as well that there's no question that traditionally higher education is responsible for a large portion of the state's infrastructure assets and has usually a great deal of portion of a bonding bill. I think the governor's concern in terms of his recommendations this time around was giving some consideration to the amount that was funded in last year's bill, that there's an awful lot of projects underway and that their requests, the actual appropriations in the last session that are all still underway and in large part many of them not even begun, gave him reason to recommend maybe a lower portion in this recommendation.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Senator.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, you know, the one thing that was a little bit baffling and where the House and the Senate are together but not with the governor was the, I guess you refer to it as a medical bioscience building. And just everything we were able to pick up as a committee and so on, I made the determination that was the most important project in the entire request. And he didn't do that. You know, the university is making some breakthroughs there. They made some breakthroughs on diabetes and now on Alzheimer's. And we were sure given the impression that they wanted to go full speed ahead. And many states are doing that. And I guess, I think he did make some comment that he would go along with that, but I was surprised he didn't do that.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Langseth, I don't know that I can comment about the specifics of not including that. I think that as we looked at the request in priority order from the University of Minnesota, we saw this further down on the priority list and tried to somewhat honor their request in terms of priorities, but also sort of looking at some of these major projects that could be phased in terms of design and maybe should be. I also understand that we're often kind of looking at a trade-off for the projects that generate a lot of economic development potential and important to position the state versus buildings that are really for the benefit of the students and the other educational programs at the university and making some trade-offs there. But I do understand, Senator Langseth, that the governor has indicated his support for the project. So it's just really a matter of priorities in the size that he was comfortable recommending. He has indicated his understanding and interest in the bill going higher, and I think certainly that's a project that he certainly indicated that he wouldn't have a problem supporting if it's in the final bill.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner, a couple more questions for you. But one of the things you said kind of seems interesting because I thought you said that, you know, in the area of higher ed, you were concerned about a lot of the projects not moving forward or they're just starting or whatever, and you've got this big list of requests. And, University of Minnesota, you recommended $40 million in Heber, and in Minsky, you recommended only $20 million. But I think, and we'll probably get into that a little bit later in the hearing, but I think if you look at last year's appropriation and you ask those institutions where they're at on their spending, I think you're going to find that Minsky is quite a bit further along on that spending. And so, while I thought the whole time some of the comments that the governor made, particularly about Minsky, I still don't understand. I'm just curious, given what you said about the reason for compiling the priority list and the numbers, why would you then put twice as much money into Heber at the University of Minnesota, half as much in Minsky, when in reality Minsky is quite a bit further along spending the appropriation from last year?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I can directly answer your question as to, you know, why the governor has made the recommendations that he has. He was really kind of making some effort to distinguish and not do the typical comparing between the U and the Minsky as to how things are treated. But, you know, it probably had some to do with the nature of the list that typically accompanies the Minsky projects. With a large number of campuses, there's a whole list of projects here, and I think that the governor had a fair amount of interest in all of those projects and was concerned about the balance between how much you spend in HEPRA versus how much on individual projects. And, you know, partly his concern was that, well, typically there's a lot of support in the legislature for individual projects, and so he was interested in those individual projects, and in fact like some of the emphasis on the science facilities in particular, and so wanted to include those in his recommendations. He also made the point, Mr. Chair, that if Minsky or members of the legislature would prefer to have the spending in HEPRA, that they certainly were free to eliminate funding for some of the projects and move that into HEPRA.
Interesting. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Ingerson, it sounds as though you might not be here later, and we might be hearing from the university later. And I don't know if they're still proceeding with their larger bioscience initiative, but you did offer an opinion on that indebtedness. Since we're talking about the context of the size of this bill and future, can you just share with the committee your view of that impact?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman. I think that there were some questions that were being raised early on about whether or not a separate funding authority authorizing bonds or a separate authority authorized to issue bonds would be included in the state's overall debt capacity. And, you know, my understanding of the way that the proposal is structured after meeting with folks in the university and some discussion with the authors on both sides is that, you know, their intention is that these be general obligation bonds of the state. So, in fact, this would count towards the overall capacity, debt management capacity, and the guideline of the state. In fact, I think that the way to look at this is, and I think Senator Langseth and others have kind of made the point that it's important to look at these bioscience kinds of buildings and these things to position us for growth in the future and so for some broader economic development purposes. And so I think the thing to think about is that there are all of these needs in the future that when you authorize bonding and use capacity within a bonding bill, these are obligations that carry out over the next 20 years. And what you would be saying in supporting the proposal that the university has brought forward is that, you know, we're today determining that, you know, this there is a higher need and it's more important to be able to move ahead with these kinds of projects in the next several years rather than have them compete every 2 years with all of the other projects in the bonding process. And, you know, I think that's really what that proposal does that's different from, say, including projects in bonding bills going forward.
Senator Scoglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Ingerson, I'm going to ask you for, to do something a little different as Commissioner of Finance. One of the things the House and Senate agree on in their bills is the new health care building at the at Lionel Lakes. Both have the language in there and both have the same amount of money. When we visited that, when the Senate visited that, Senator Semjian and I noticed how they continue to deal with paper files, large paper files, and there was no intention to change that at all. They were going to go to this new modern 21st century facility and they were going to deal with 19th century technology when it came to keeping track of patient records. I doubt there's a clinic being built in America today that is doing that. Everybody is online. It seems to me we'd be saving money for the state if we were to put our big picture hat on and were to be looking at electronic files. I guess I'd ask you as Commissioner of Finance to look at what could or should be done to make certain that we're doing everything we can to save money and have more accurate records by building that technology into this proposal. I don't expect a response from you now, but it's something that it's just a matter of time before you'll be coming before us and saying we need $10 million for this because we didn't do it right the first time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. We're appreciative of your comments. And if you're still here and we have questions, we'll drag you back up. One thing that might be helpful, you mentioned that $960 million overall size. Maybe between now and the next meeting, you can sit down with the governor and kind of, like I think we've all done, kind of design bills. Maybe you could design a $960 million bill. We'll take a peek at it, and maybe we'll look at it and say, boy, this looks like the cat's pajamas and pass it. So we would be interested in seeing the governor's revised list at that number as well. That might get to the other question I had. So,
Mr. Chair, I certainly will talk to the governor about that. I'm not sure that I can commit to bringing that forward with to you.
I'll bet not.
And actually, Mr. Chair, I guess I would also say that you know, the governor certainly respects the negotiation process here and understands that there's it's worth understanding what are the important projects to both the House and Senate as part of this negotiation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cornyn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know you're asking the commissioner to go back and ask the governor what his proposal is. If you look at this sheet here, I think he already has his proposals here. It says governor's proposal, House proposal, and Senate proposal. So I think he's kind of made it clear what his wish list is. I wouldn't think so.
Senator, maybe you didn't hear the commissioner when she said that. I think the governor's willing to look at a larger bill now in the area of $960 million. In all funds, I believe is what she said, and I think that the governor's list in front of you in all funds is around $930 million, so there must be another $30 million
dollars.
Okay. So
sounds like we're moving in the right direction then.
Mr. Chair, if I might, when we're kind of looking at the comparison between the governor and the House and the Senate, understanding that at least the proposal, there are not trunk highway bonded projects included in this bill in either the House or the Senate proposal, but there's discussion about including them somehow separately. So when we kind of look at the comparison here, we would set aside what the governor has recommended for the trunk highway bonding projects and really look at the comparison with the overall size of the bill under the governor's recommendations as being $895 million if you take that off. And then so then comparing to the House is slightly under a billion, the Senate slightly over a billion. So really kind of looking at the fact that from the governor's perspective, there'd be a sizable amount of dollars in the $70 million range.
So, Commissioner, you're saying 960. Not including trunk highway.
Right. And, Mr. Chair, and what the governor said exactly, because he didn't want to certainly dictate anything, any particular dollar amount, but simply state a preference, as he said, we would like to see a bill in the 960s. So, and Mr. Chair, I guess in regarding your request that we go back and look at things that are that the governor might accept to be funded up to this higher dollar amount, I think what I the projects that I earlier mentioned are the things that are really important to again, like I understand there's both House and Senate folks have some priorities in the process, and I think I'm kind of making a pitch here for the things that were included in the governor's recommendations that are important to be included in a final bill. And beyond those, I'm not sure if it's as important for us to weigh in, knowing that you each have your own priorities that need to fit into that what would be a smaller dollar amount.
Great.
Mr. Chairman,
you have another question, Senator?
Mike? No. Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm kind of curious. Are we going to set some targets at all, or you know, have? I mean, don't we set targets and say this is what our target's going to be, and then we kind of work towards that? Or we're not seeing a firm number from the governor's office. So I'm just wondering, Mr. Chairman, this kind of a question: do we set targets or not really?
Right. And again, I apologize. Maybe you weren't in the room at the beginning of the hearing, and I apologize if you weren't. But Senator Langseth tells me that on behalf of the Senate, he has total flexibility in setting that number. I don't have that. So we'll leave the governor out for a second. I don't have that flexibility, nor do I think any, at least from a House perspective, as any chair. I thought that it was reasonable to set a target before we passed the bills. In fact, the Speaker and I and the Majority Leader sat down with Senator Langseth and Senator Johnson prior to either body passing the bills, and I thought, you know, this waiting around until the last minute for targets hasn't worked so well in the past. Let's get a target that we agree upon and pass the bills at that size. And I was told, no, we had to have a lot of process and a lot of things had to happen and occur before that would happen. So I thought, well, okay, so we passed the bills and been asking the Speaker and others, could we get a target here so we get this done? And I think 2 weeks ago, Senator Johnson's reply was, well, we can't get one to you and decide that until next Wednesday. At the same time, Senator Langseth says he gets to set it, and so I don't know how that actually you know, I don't know what the interplay is there. And so that was last Wednesday, and that kind of came and went. And then they had a discussion on Thursday, and, you know, I said, Mr. Speaker, do you have a target so we could go get this done? Because it'll probably take 48 hours at the most, probably to put this together. You know, Green Senator Johnson reached a target, and he tells me no. But I guess really what he's telling me is he's trying to reach a target with the wrong guy. I guess he should be negotiating with Senator Langsup. Maybe I'll have him call you, Senator, since you set that target for the Senate. And it didn't occur to me until just now that no darn wonder he's been unable to get an agreement. He's negotiating with the wrong guy. So I'll see if I can set a meeting up with the Senator, Senator Langsup, and the Speaker, and maybe we can get a target.
I guess that kind of answers my question, but I'm just saying that I think it's going to be hard for us to get to a resolution unless we have a target.
Mr. Chair, I've been talking to Senator Johnson. He had talked to Representative Swiggin, and they were a ways apart. Senator Johnson was really talking about somewhere about halfway between the Senate and the House, which seems to be quite logical, I would say. And the speakers seem to be saying, well, you've got to count these other funds, and it appears that that would be going with the House number. I guess we have a problem with starting out by going with the House number. It seemed like a compromise would be the way to go, and go about halfway in between, and that's kind of my position. And Senator Johnson does ask me where I think we should end up, and I said about halfway between. And he did relate that to the speaker.
Great. I think the third party in there would be the governor, unless you want to, you know, just kind of put it together and see what happens with the veto pin. Otherwise, I guess we could put all three of them together and divide by three if you want to go to the compromise approach. But I don't think either of us would like that very well, because I think that would end up a smaller veto. So probably beauty in the eye of the beholder. But I will have the speaker call your office and try to set up a meeting with you and see if you can reach a target with him. That'd be great. Okay. Because I don't, just in our corner, I don't have that ability. And okay. Other questions for old commissioner, please.
Mr. Chair, I understand that you have kind of laid out a schedule of things that you wanted to talk about in order, and I think that that's a very useful strategy, and particularly talking about some of the infrastructure needs. But I was wondering if you would indulge Commissioner Fabian for just a couple of minutes. Okay. Thanks anyway.
Thank you. Not that we don't like her, but, you know, we would be here all afternoon and actually get anything done. And so I would as much as I like the commissioner, say no, but when that's on the agenda, we'd really, really,
okay.
really welcome
Great.
Her. And I suggest, you know, maybe calling before
okay.
the meeting actually starts. It might have helped you there, too, a little bit. But that's just a friendly hint. What do I have?
Okay,
great.
Thanks.
With that, let's move on to higher education. I think we'll take the Minsky guys since they're there first. I've got a couple
Mr.
questions.
Payne.
We'll see if other people do.
Mr. Chairman? Just while they're coming down, can I just, Mr. Walls, would it be possible or simple to put together a list of projects that are either being phased in or projects that we would have to have a future commitment, whether they're in design phase or something like that, just following up on Commissioner Ingerson's discussion about future responsibilities that we might have. I'm just wondering how much of our bonding bill is related to projects that are either is part of a phase-in or are part of a design phase this year, and then we'll have future commitments later. I don't need it now. I'm just wondering if you can pull that together, if that's possible.
Yeah. And he's indicating he'll give that a shot. If he has any questions, he'll work with you on that. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself. And maybe, to start with, and I don't know if everyone has one, but I think it's in your packet. I got an email from somebody that showed me the list of DEPA projects between the original Senate number, which was, I believe, quite a bit higher than ours, $55 million, and the House number at, I believe, $40 million. And I don't know who put that list together. I assume you did, of projects that would be excluded at the House number. And so then I also have asked for a list, because maybe we really have our priorities screwed up and we ought to be putting even more into HEPR. And so I think that there's a list in everyone's packet, and for one who wanted a copy of what would be included if we went to $75 million. And so I guess I'm looking for your comments on your priorities. I know the University of Minnesota seemed to say, at one hearing we had in the House anyway, that before you
we went above $40 million in HEPA, they would prefer to see the regional centers funded. And so I thought that was curious because, you know, HEPA's that number one deal. But if you kind of talk about HEPA in terms of, you know, I assume you want to at least be at the Senate's number since you sent that spreadsheet out. And I guess I'm inclined to think that we ought to do that, but maybe start the discussion now.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Alan Johnson from Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. With respect to that spreadsheet that you have in front of you, it does have our full request for $110 million, and then it does list, as you indicated, the $40 million from the House original bill and the $55 from the Senate, and then a $75 million list that I believe was requested to be prepared and sent in, and we did do that. The Board of Trustees' first priority is HEPA, and the request was $110 million. I did say, I think, that in testimony that $110 million, though, was predicated on a substantial reduction in our backlog over a period of 10 years. You may remember that we, going into this session, we had a $630-some-odd million backlog of work. You've seen a lot of that as you've made your tours around our campuses. The $110 million was predicated on bringing that backlog down over 10 years to about 50%. And so that's why the 110 is the large number that it is. The $55 million, we were doing some calculations and putting this together. $55 million will pretty much, given the fact, given that there are many projects funded, would be funded, as Senator Langstaff indicated, that are renovation, repairs, renewal projects, given that those might be funded, the $55 million will keep us at about par and maybe make a little dent into that backlog. So I hope that puts it in perspective.
So would it be fair to say that the first $55 million you'd prefer to see in HEPA?
Mr. Chairman, I have to say that the Board of Trustees 110 is the first request, and I hope I put in perspective that the 55 for your consideration keeps things at par and helps to make a slight reduction in the backlog.
So I'm not asking you to say that would be enough or not enough. I think the question was, would the first $55 million, is that where you'd prefer to see the first $55 million?
That's where I would prefer to see that $55.
Senator Langsa.
Mr. Chair, what is the dividing point between the repairs from HEPA versus the total renovations? Is there a certain dollar amount or what?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Langsa, it would vary project by project. And for example, you mentioned the Moorhead-McLean Hall renovation work. A substantial amount of that project you could call HEPA work. It's basically renewal of an existing structure. Other projects would have a different level, each one being something different. Because of the backlog that we have, we've primarily focused HEPA towards reducing the backlog, tackling those smaller projects, as you said, the roofs, the boilers, the heating and ventilating systems, the building envelope, and the like.
Well, Mr. Chair, let's just say that we were to do all of the list that deals with renovation. Wouldn't that also reduce the backlog considerably? And like the people at Moorhead State said, that if there are two projects that are on here would eventually be done, that would reduce the deferred maintenance by quite a bit.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Langstaff, that is correct. That is correct. That would help to reduce the backlog as well.
Last year, your appropriation in this area was $41,500,000. Can you tell us where you're at on that? Commissioner Anderson said one of the things the governor looked at was progress made on last year's appropriation. Can you tell us the status of that?
Mr. Chairman, as of the 31st of March, of that $41 million, 70% of it was under contract and committed, and approximately 42 or 43% was spent. So that's executing ahead of our plan. It will meet our two-year commitment that we've made before this body many times, that we will encumber or commit the HEPA funds in 24 months, and we will spend it in 30 months. We're well on the way to do that.
Okay. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask your question in a slightly different way than you asked. His question was, where would you spend the first 55? Mine is, if we say we divide the bill and now we've determined NINSCU gets this much, what you were telling us is the first 55 goes to HEPR and that means fewer projects. That would be what we would have to infer from how you answered the chair's question. My follow-up question to that would be, as you look at your priorities and take us down the list, are there one or two projects in that middle range that we need more information about, that if we didn't proceed with them because of your desire for HEPR, we would have other issues? I don't know if that is a fuzzy question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I would say that we would ask that you come up from the bottom of the list. We put that priority list together, and the board approved it that way with consideration of the criticalities, priorities, enrollment growth, and all the other planning factors. So given whatever the desire is to fund HEPR, then we would suggest coming up from the bottom.
And, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I think my question is, that's what we're all inclined to do, come from the bottom. Is there any information, so that would be somewhere in the middle where we're going to stop. Do we need to know anything about the timing of any of those projects in the middle where if we drew the line there, you'd have some complications?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, not knowing specifically where that line might be drawn, it would be difficult to answer that. But
Representative Hausman, I think we'll make it a little easier for him
okay.
to do that. Because
okay.
in thinking about what I wanted to accomplish today, we prepared something that I thought would be middle ground or whatever, I think reasonable place to start in.
That might be a good way for him to get at it.
The area of higher education, certainly not saying that that's all we spend. Perhaps to put a bill together, we come back, we'd have more money, but at least something for us to take a look at. Maybe I guess you can comment from where that middle is. I think that would give you a better idea, at least from our perspective.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Langer.
Mr. Chair, I notice you're planning money generally. Most of your proposals is further down the list. However, out of, I don't know what it is, 8 or 10 of them, the total cost is probably less than $4 million. Now, if we don't do the planning money this year, it probably cuts you out from construction in 2 years, I would guess. And I guess I'm a little surprised that the planning money is that low on the priority list, because if we didn't do that $3 or $4 million, you're probably not going to have too much to do 2 years from now. And I know certain people that want to cut that one off so that 2 years from now it will be a lot lower. But I mean, is the planning money really that low on your list, or how would you prepare for 2 years from now if you receive no planning money?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, Senator Langseth, the planning money, as you said, does help to put work into the pipeline, so we can orderly plan for our next capital program. And in view of that, there are several projects that are higher on the list that were for planning money this year. Without funding those that are lower on the list, and the only reason they might be lower on the list simply is because they are newer projects seen by the board for the first time, considered by the board for the first time. Planning in and of itself does not make it lower on the list. You can see that in the case of Bemidji State University, the SatGas Science Edition is only for planning money, and it was quite high on the priority. So was Inver Hills, was well above the halfway point on the priority list. St. Paul College, although it's at $3 million, you may recall that two and a half of that was just for electrical infrastructure, $500,000 was for planning. So there are projects that would be planned, would be moving forward, and they were sprinkled in that top section because of their criticality and their attractiveness to the board. Not having those below that cut line, I mean, that indeed would slow things down into the 08 cycle.
I think that we'll represent the House, would you like to ask your question again?
And maybe I could then now give an example. If we fund at that $55 million HEPR level, then where we run into problems is system-wide property acquisition. And so, for example, the St. Cloud Tech land acquisition, is that in danger if we don't do it now? Is that land still available?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, the St. Cloud Tech land would be in jeopardy because of not getting the funding. We would not be able to fulfill our agreement with the seller, and we might lose that deal.
It's also fair to say, however, you took that into account when you assembled your priority list and put land acquisition as far down as you did.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
So on this list, with the exception of the Memorial Hall expansion way down at the bottom, that would be in your priority order. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that looks to be correct. Yes, sir.
And so if, we agree to this today as a place to start, and we come back at the end of the day and we have an extra $2 million, I would assume that you would want that in HEPA.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative McNamara was first, and Representative Norris.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, I wanted to set a couple things. I think one of the reasons that you haven't been able to find more projects on the list to talk about is the fact that we funded all 31 projects last year. I think that's important that we put that into context. And I'm glad that you again prioritized the HEPR, because as we toured throughout the summer and saw all these projects, I think that is a priority. I think it's important for people to know that we funded every one of the projects on the list last year, and that's why I think it's that much more important that we do the HEPR this year. Mr. Johnson, my question is, it seems like, I'm really glad you showed us where the HEPR was going to go this year. I think that's important because we can look at and see where the money's going to be spent. What are the projections for the number of students in Minsk-U? As we move forward, there's so much pressure to build these buildings. What's the projection in 10 years from now and 15 years from now, the number of students that we'll have in the Minsk-U system with the vast number of campuses we have here? Are the projections that we're going to have more students? I'm assuming that's the case the way we keep building the buildings.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, our predictions are for gradual continued growth overall, higher growth in the metro area, flat in greater Minnesota. And I think that you'll see that where we add new space, it's in response to that growth in the metro area. Where we add new space in greater Minnesota, it's in response to growth in programs at the given locations. The Tech College at Moorhead is a good example, with exploding population and enrollment growth there, even though it's not in the Twin Cities metro area. I think you'll see consistently new space where there's growth, and renovation repairs still being focused on, for the most part, around the system.
Thank you. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to the property acquisition part here, and I remember touring St. Cloud State Tech, and is this the clinic next door? Is that part of this acquisition?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norris, this is for that building adjacent to the campus. It was $3.4 million, I believe.
Okay. My question, because I thought that was really a good opportunity for the tech school, could we carve that one out? Because you've got 6.8, is what the governor, you wanted 11 something. I'd hate to lose that part of it if that's possible. That's just a suggestion.
I think Representative Norris is something that as we put the bill together, if we have more dollars, we could certainly take a look at. But if I'm over speaking here, but I think had the trustees felt that that was meritorious for being carved out and elevated, they would have carved it out and elevated it on that list. Am I correct in that, Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's the way the priority list was put together.
All right. Thank you.
We don't have any other comments, either for Mr. Johnson or specifically. I guess what I was thinking about as I went through this and looked again, thinking that this may not be where we end up, depending on the target that the Speaker and Senator Langseth eventually agree to. It's certainly, I thought, a very good place to start. If I looked at the Senate original bill and the House original bill, what you'll see is that, you know, there's three or four projects that were common to both or that were on our list. You know, we removed those as well as the ones below that were on the Senate list and so went up in overall dollars, but those dollars went into what is their number one priority, or at least as I hear it, particularly when I saw the spreadsheet of the two proposals. I think that was a pretty clear signal, at least to me, that they were inkling that that's what they would prefer. And so that's kind of how I arrived at this. I don't mean it to be the final deal. I just think that it's we've been out and trying to reach an accord, and maybe that will become more and more clear as we start to put things together. Maybe the Speaker and Senator Johnson, I'm just kidding you a little bit there, Senator Johnson, the governor, will give us a target. And maybe they'll say, boy, it's going to have to be closer to the Senate number because that's a pretty good bill they put together down there. So, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I appreciate the House moving in this direction, up about $19-20 million for higher education. And I am a little concerned, though, about that classroom building at the University of Minnesota, that your proposal is not to fund that. Now, obviously, I'm a strong supporter of the medical research building, but, you know, we toured that building. In fact, they wouldn't even let us inside it because they were so embarrassed. Right there on Washington, right across the street from Kauffman, you know, it is kind of an embarrassment. It's in such bad shape.
Right. You know, Senator Pappas, and we'll bring the university up next. I think we do have some questions. I know, you know, Representative Houseman and I were discussing that, and if you look at the university's preliminary priority list, I think that project was quite a bit higher, and I hadn't realized that until just before this meeting, and I think that's a very good question that we ought to ask them about. And, you know, we struggle all the time trying to figure out, you got the bioscience deal, you got stadiums, you got, you know, it's hard to keep it all straight. So I appreciate everything you're saying there.
Mr. Chairman, if we were to authorize the bioscience bonding authority, we could turn over that medical building to that authority to fund, and then we could fund the classroom building.
We would have less, much smaller bill because you'd lose your 3% debt service because the separate appropriation they talked would be rung up against that 3% debt service. So we certainly could do that, though.
Yeah, I don't think the cost is that significant for the first building.
If you fully fund it, I think it would be. I think fully funding is fully funding, and I don't know if they envisioned fully funding it right away or if they were going to wait a couple years before they built it or not. But if they were going to build it, you know, $40 million is $40 million. If they were just going to take a smaller number and then build it out in the out years, you'd be correct that it wouldn't have that same impact. But perhaps we should save that question until the university is before us, and in fairness to them. And I guess I don't have a preference. I mean, you know, I thought we'd talk about higher ed altogether, you know, before we thought about it. Maybe we should talk about the Minsky portion only while he's here. I'd be curious to know, you know, what the thoughts are from the Senate side. Do you think this is a reasonable place to start building a bill from? I mean, I think that as I've listened to people, I think it does recognize the priorities, and I apologize if I don't recall this, but I think, you know, Representative Nornes is the House higher ed chair, and I believe you're the Senate higher ed chair, and so, you know, what are your thoughts, Senator Davis?
Mr. Chairman, I just will make a quick follow-up and then I'll turn it over to my colleague. I just appreciate having my colleague, Representative Nornes, on the conference committee this year, looking out for higher ed from the House's perspective. And no, I said before, I thought this proposal is moving in the right direction.
Senator Metz?
Yeah, I just echo well, thank you for putting this a good start. I think I like it, and I just echo the thoughts of Senator Pappas here that we've already figured out about 20 items here that looks like we agree on, and I think that's the way to get going. So, good work.
Thank you. Senator Langston, did you want to say something before we went to
the Mr. Chair, you know, I was looking at this, and I mean, this is something that we're not going to all of a sudden just make a motion to adopt. We would, I don't know whether, if we want to do something today, take some action, then maybe a recess or something, but obviously we would want to sit down and just talk about it. And probably a good share of it we'll agree with, and some we might not. But it is a good start.
Yeah. And I think at some point today, Senators, you know, we would like to take action, but I do think that would be more than appropriate. You know, I certainly don't expect people to walk in and say, boy.
Chairman, general comments right now. I mean, you know, we're going to have to look.
Other questions for Minsky before we move on to our friends at the University of Minnesota? Thank you for your time. We appreciate that very much. University to come down, and I'm going to ask the Mary Murphy question. It's on owner the Mary Murphy question. How the heck come those twins can put grass in the stadium and you can't? Murphy and I keep scratching our head. They know more about turf, I guess.
Do they have a copy? Does the university?
I'm sorry?
Does the university have a copy?
Make sure they have a copy of what we're going to do. Oh, okay. And Ron, maybe you could get us some copies. Give people copies of their original priority list and their revised priority list so we can maybe...
I've got both.
Representative Hausman has them. I thought that was very interesting. O'Brien, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Kathleen O'Brien, Vice President for University Services at the University of Minnesota, and happy to be here.
We are pleased to have you. Maybe just some general comments first before we talk about at least the preliminary proposal that at some point is going to move. We heard the governor, the commissioner say that their recommendations are based on, you know, how we've done spending. Last year's priorities, and I think last year you were at a roughly $40 million in HEPA as well. And at least when we had the hearing in the House, you were significantly, too harsh, you were somewhat behind Minsky in putting dollars under contract at that time. Has that changed, or do you know where you were at March 31st?
Mr. Chair, conference committee members, the University of Minnesota, when we reported in March at the House hearing, I believe we reported that we had about 21% of last year's dollars under contract, and that by July 1st we would have over 90% under contract or are in construction, and we are making steady progress towards that goal. So by the 1st of July, we will have over 90% of last year's bonding bill under contract or construction.
And just for context, I guess that's why when I thought about the two, you know, if you think about it, the same time frame, Minsky had 70% under contract of their last year appropriation. Thinking about what the governor's office had said, it just seemed to me that, you know, we got a lot more campuses. It just, you know, I don't honestly think we ought to just give them both the same or something. I thought we should have a rationale behind it. So that's kind of where I had certainly picked the number, but I'm open to interpretation. Relative to priorities, I know we had that discussion. I think you've had it in the Senate, and I think, you know, and I won't try to get you to tell us where the stadium is and all that, but, you know, it does get difficult because, you know, on one hand, I get it. You know, if you can keep it all separate, you might bring home more at the end of the day. But, you know, in my head, I kind of, at the end of the day, I'm going to count it all as University of Minnesota projects. And so it does make it kind of difficult when you're seemingly all over the board. But I think the question that Senator Pappas raised, and I think the question that when we look at the preliminary request the university was going to have versus the actual request, I'm somewhat skeptical. I sometimes think people put their number one request as number three, so they hope to get those other two home. It's kind of my feeling, but maybe I'm too jaded. But what about that science and classroom building? How did that go from number one to, I think, number three? I'm working from memory, but what happened? Did it heal itself?
Mr. Chair and Conference Committee members, to answer your first question, your last question directly, and then make a couple of other comments, our priority order was CEPR, the two business schools, and the science classroom building, and the two business schools were in ranking above the science classroom building because they both had substantial private gifts that we did not want to lose the opportunity to utilize. The science classroom building is a very important building in terms of the large science classes in chemistry and physics. Over 12,000 students a semester are taking classes in those buildings. It also removes a significant problem from our building stock and begins to deal with some of our asset issues. So that building solved several problems, as well as the addition of a chiller to that area of campus. So it's a very high priority.
Let me make sure I understand this. If we think then from your initial priority list, which had, if I recall, a science classroom building as number one, the reason that that went down, if you just ranked it on, you left the private dollars out for a second, that would still rank above it?
And I can give you the dates. They're going out to make copies so that everyone on the committee sees that. But in June of 2005, your preliminary rankings were CEPR, then the science, the research classroom, the research building, medical research building. The second was the science classrooms and student services. And then the third and fourth were the Carlson and the Duluth schools. But then in your final ranking, they almost reversed orders. And so you were saying those two business schools had private dollars. Did those private dollars come in after June of 2005? And was that why those two? Because from my perspective, I would see absolutely how the university would put that bioscience, that medical research building, as its first. Mm-hmm. And just the condition of that science classroom, I could see how that might be second. So the reverse of those, which we now have for the committee, it would be interesting to see how those priorities were arrived at.
Ms. O'Brien.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, the initial listing, which is our preliminary listing, certainly reflected the importance of those buildings to the future of the university. And part of the discussion that the university really developed after that June preliminary list was the recognition that the science classroom building was really being put into consideration with other high programmatic needs and facilities condition needs within the university and across the higher ed system. And it's really because of that in the fall that we developed the biomedical sciences authority concept, and that in the private dollars that had already been identified for the Carlson and the Labovitz business schools contributed to our rearrangements of the ranking. Hi, Darlene, do you want to say something?
Senator Scoblin.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. That was built in...
I should have been waiting for her.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing is I should have put the pitch in for House TV because they do a good job. But if we always remember to speak into our microphone, sometimes it's hard to do that and look at them too. But if we could remember to do that so that folks at home can hear as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bryant, I'm trying to remember. Was that built in 65, 66, the science classroom building?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoglin, I believe that it was in the early 60s.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was at BU, and I think it replaced a couple of wooden classroom buildings, World War II Army barracks buildings, if I remember correctly. And I have to say, when I was at BU, it was a new building, and it was the worst building I had in my university career to take a class in. The rumor on campus then was that it was a temporary building, just like the wooden barracks buildings were, that it replaced. And you dreaded if you had to take a class there because it was cold, or it was hot, or you couldn't see, or you couldn't hear. It was absolutely the worst building that was there. You know, the House and Senate don't agree on building a new building, but we both agree on tearing it down. And if there's anything we can do, we're going to vote right now to tear the darn thing down, then maybe we'll do the right thing and build a new one, because it is a horrid building that's an embarrassment to the university, if you ask me.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Skoglund, building was actually never completed. And it looks like it was never completed. I believe it received partial funding from the legislature. I also should add, Mr. Chairman, that in response to Representative Hausman's question, our preliminary request was really not a ranked request, and so we didn't really re-rank them. It was a preliminary request, and the ranking that we gave in Cape submitted in the fall was the appropriate ranking.
Talk to us a little bit, you know, working from memory at least when you test up before the House, despite the larger request in HEPA, my understanding was that before we went over 40, at least at the time that I believe President Lunick suggested that we do the regional centers and stations prior to that. Is that still the position of the University of Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I also recall President Lunick stating that if the university received $40 million, that additional dollars, he would have those allocated to projects.
And then after HEPRA, is your number one project then the Carlson School, or in light of the bioscience initiative maybe not traveling on its own, is it still the Carlson School, or help us understand that?
Mr. Chairman, our priorities after HEPA are the two business schools because of the growth in those academic programs and the private funding, the science classroom building, and the biomedical sciences building in that order.
Okay.
It would be our hope, as Senator Pappas suggested earlier, that there might be policy consideration by the legislature for the support of the biomedical authority.
And if that doesn't happen until next year, you'd prefer then to take those dollars from the medical research building. And, you know, in the Senate, there was only partial funding of the Carlson School. And in the House, we had partially funded the Science and Teaching Center. So I understand what you're saying then, even though that may not happen this year, your preference would be to move those dollars up into those other buildings.
I think I want to confer with Donna Peterson before I respond. Is that okay?
Okay. Oh, absolutely. Heck yeah.
You're not there.
Is there any questions or comments while we're in the pre-conferring or consulting area?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Langston.
I did talk to somebody who was involved with the U and wondered why it was that biotech building wasn't the number one, and the answer was something like, well, we felt we should defer to the students. And I guess I understand that from a PR point of view, but in the legislature, I don't think that's our concern. I think it's what is the most important, and I think both the House and Senate decided their priorities weren't quite what they should have been. Ms. O'Brien.
Mr. Chairman, Conference Committee members, when the university brings forward its list of requests, as does MinSCU and other state departments, all of them are priorities because they're all essential. We have to put them in priority order, and we stand by that priority order. As Senator Langseth suggests, it's very difficult to say that the biomedical sciences is building is the fourth priority at the University of Minnesota. All of these are really equal priorities, but we have had to rank them for a priority order for your consideration. Actually, the reason the Biomedical Sciences Authority is brought from the university to the legislature for consideration is the fact that in many other states, special funding that's a longer range funding for a longer range commitment to the development of this academic program, but certainly economic development resource from the state, has been taken out of consideration with other bonding bill requests. And the university really believes that we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't bring that policy issue to you and ask for your consideration of it.
Two things. Then I'm going to go back to the HUPR comment then. Why request $80 million and then say, well, $40 million is really the number, now put the number here? If you, I mean, if you came with the request, what was magic about that $40 million then? And that's what I think gets hard for us to understand is, you know, we listen and it seems like, no, it's the stadium is the most important thing. Well, no, it's not really the stadium. It's this medical school science initiative thing. You know, and so that's what, I mean, it's a little clear cut. I mean, we asked the question of Minsky, you know, if you had 40 and you had 15 more, they're going to put it in HEPR. If you had another 5, they're going to put it in HEPR. So help us understand that, because, you know, that's what confuses me about it, is when the president says, well, before you go above 40, go down to the bottom of our list. And that throws me off.
Mr. Chairman, I want to be very clear for the University of Minnesota. The bonding bill requests and the projects in the bonding bill request are the university's priorities. And that's what the president has said in every hearing where he's been asked that question.
Well,
you were raising the issue about the stadium versus the bonding bill.
No, your recollection earlier was the same as mine. When President Brunich testified before the House, he suggested that before we went above $40 million in paper, that we go down to the bottom of the list and do the regional. And so in my head, that's what, you know, why ask for $80 million if you really mean 40? Or if you mean 40, then these, and then more HEPR. And that's what's hard to... So that's why I think we struggle trying to figure out, which is what Senator Langsdorff was saying, is we struggle trying to figure out what is really your number one priority.
Representative Dorman, I was trying to address the issue of the overall priority of the university before I address the HEPR question. The overall priority of the university being its academic programs and this bonding bill request that is before you. With regard to HEPR, our $80 million HEPR request is based on a facilities condition assessment that's an inspection-based assessment of all 28 million gross square feet of space that the University of Minnesota has. We have real needs and real projects that $80 million would be used for. And in fact, I could be here before you with a $160 million HEPR request. When the university is before you and says, we could live with a $40 million request, but if it went below $40 million, that would be a problem, it's because we have prioritized all of those projects, and we know if we went below $40 million, we would really begin to damage the infrastructure of those university buildings. So we recognize you have limited resources, and we are trying to present a proposal that's on the one hand a legitimate representation of what the university needs, but also recognizing with all the priorities we are bringing towards to you, that we want to work with you in developing this bill.
Are there other questions for Representative McNamara?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice President, it was Vice President, wasn't it? Vice President O'Brien, my questions will be similar to the ones we asked of Minsky. Of the $40 million, I believe, in HEPR last year, how much of it is under contract currently? And then how much of the money under contract has been spent?
Ms. O'Brien.
Chair Dorman and Representative McNamara, about one-third is under contract, and I don't have the exact numbers of how much has been spent, but I can get that for you.
Great. Other questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
So we funded it last year at $40 million, and actually two-thirds of that's not even under contract yet, if I understand you right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, that's correct. And as I testified earlier, by July 1st, over 90% of it will be under contract and in construction. Projects have been under design and going out for bid, and we are poised with the end of the school year and the construction season to start those projects.
Mr. Chair and Vice President O'Brien, I'm glad to hear that. That it's the seasonal nature of the schools
yes.
that are making a difference. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have
Thank you.
Additional comments or suggestions?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should probably ask this question.
That's
all right. Thanks.
You bet. Thank
you. Okay. Let's move then. And I guess I think that I understand. I don't know what I need to hear from the DNR necessarily on the because the next total on the sheet would be the $25 million in flood mitigation dollars, and I think that's pretty clear, Senator, unless you want the DNR to come and talk about it. I mean, I think that's the number that I got the impression that you liked. I mean, I think that's a little more straightforward than trying to figure out what the number one priority is for you.
You're talking about the $25 million.
Right. But
yeah, we had 24 something, and I think I could justify every dollar down to that. Then later, the DNR come in with a request saying that Delano was very needy and had a very good plan there, and so that was $1.4 million. So I think the 25 we can kind of get in there, but we just
and I don't think we need to have anybody come.
No, that's fine.
Any other members have any questions about Representative Hausman?
Well, the one I think that the Senate perhaps didn't have, and that I wondered if you had an opportunity to hear about, was Golden Valley. I don't know if Ann Rest would have brought that to you.
Mr. Chair. Representative Hausman, was that on the DNR list? The DNR had a list of $46 million, and it was on there.
It was laid in.
I think it was a laid in.
It wasn't actually on it. Well, that's why it wouldn't have been in.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we passed the bill.
Oh,
about,
this was early. Then,
about
right.
3 weeks earlier, and then that Delano one came afterwards, and and maybe that one as well. So if that wasn't on the DNR list, that's why it wasn't in there.
And so, Mr. Chair, my request would just be that the Senate might take a look at that before we...
what we did last time is the Senate listed them all. And then we talked to DNR and Mr. Lacus-Mohan and got his idea what the priority was. And then so we pulled off the specifics because it looked good. And I will go through that process again and just see how that looks.
Okay, the next area I don't mean that there's not things we're going to do or that there's not things that we could already agree to, but I think the ones that at least I thought would be the low-hanging fruit that seems to be common with the three of us, including the governor, if we hop over to the Department of Transportation section, and I guess, again, not asking for a vote, we'll have that recess, you're done with Senator Lang. So I guess what I put together there is, and in my head, it seems that if we're going to do, as I think we should, an awful lot of these transit projects, including the $60 million for the North Star, even though they still haven't finalized their negotiations with the Burlington Santa Fe Northern Railroad, that we should have awfully strong numbers then in the local bridge and the local road improvement grants. And they're a little bit south of what we had in the House bill, but I think that given the fact that, as I understand it, at least today, we don't have
full agreement on that I-35 bus rapid transit way. You'll notice that if you combine it with the Met Council, which is the next one down, I excluded that only because that was not in the Senate bill, and in some discussions I had with Senator Langstroth, not that he opposes it, but certainly it seemed like he had some questions there, and so I didn't want to seem like I was trying to force something. Doesn't mean we won't still do it, but I just thought if there was question, I didn't want to necessarily include it. Senator Langstroth.
Mr. Chair, we have been talking to people, and it kind of appears that the $3.3 million is basically what they would like to have at this point. There's a park and ride that was going to be like $5 million. It wouldn't be all that timely, but it could be that the Senate would be willing to put something in there, and we have had communications with people on that.
Right. You should ask the Met Council to come down and chat with us, and I guess that's why, you know, Senator, I left that one out, because if it seemed to be some discussion, if we can resolve it today, that's great, and if we can't, it might seem prudent to leave that for another day. Well, welcome. Please identify yourself for the committee, and we'd love to talk to you maybe about, I don't think we have a lot of questions on the other stuff, so if you could, you know, for at least the time being, unless members have questions, talk to us about the I-35 bus rapid transit way. I think the reason that the questions come up, in all fairness to the Senate, is not that they don't support the project, but I do believe it was a later request, and so, you know, I don't want to, you know, ring them up and say, boy, they don't like it. I just think it was a later request, and so we'd be certainly willing. Is $3.3 million really the number you need there, or is that part of it, or do you want the park and ride and not the, is that the 46th Street station? Is that what the 3.3 is? Yeah. And
Mr. Chair, it is.
Talk to us about the timing of it.
Yes. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here. With me to my left is Judge Shetna, and I want to recognize Betsy Hodges, City Council, a person from Minneapolis as well. As you indicated, the $3.3 million for the 46th station is the critical component of this. In addition to that, we anticipate getting $2 million from the feds, and the Met Council will be putting $500,000 in regional transit bonds into this. This is a time-sensitive issue, that this be done at the same time as we're doing the crosstown is being restructured and expanded, and that if we did this out of sequence with that would really delay, create a significant amount of congestion in that corridor. While, of course, we would appreciate the full 8.3, the critical piece, as you indicated, is the 3.3, and it is for those reasons that I just stated.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. We've been hearing second-hand, third-hand, everything about this money that may be freed up from the bus garage, that it was previously authorized and could be transferred, and we've heard that the governor probably wants some of that on the central corridor and part of it on that. You ready to say anything about that, or isn't? Aren't you talking about it yet, or what?
We are looking at that. There has been no discussions that I have been a part of to use that for this. There have been some internal discussions about any use of those dollars to expand the request that we have for the Central Corridor, but not for this.
Mr. Chair, you know, the Senate had $5 million for the Central Corridor, and I think the governor just had $2.5 million. I think he was thinking about $8 million above his request, and we were thinking $5 million above our request, with $3 million going for that. But obviously, that's something we'll have to work out.
Mr. Chair, Senator Langstroth, that's essentially correct. The discussions were around perhaps moving the Central Corridor from the 2.5 to 10, and the vehicle for doing that would be to use the 7.3 that we had for the garage. 7.8, I'm sorry, for the Snelling Bus Garage, which that lapses at the end of this year. Or next year?
Chairman. Senator Metzen.
Yeah, just in this area, and we're not going to make a decision on this this afternoon, but in the Senate version, under the Met Council area, we have $1 million in for the so-called Lafayette-Robert Street Transit Corridor Study. And there's 300,000 or 400,000 people down in that region, And it's just time, I think, in about 7 city councils and mayors, chamber of commerces and Rotary and Kiwanis, and they're all on board. And it's time to start looking to see if this is feasible. Apparently they're going to be building a new, Lafayette Bridge in a few years. I think it's some problems there. And now would be the time to start planning and to get over the river, and maybe it'd be the, you know, the 52 corridor, and then get over to Robert Street. So I just wanted to make it an awareness of the panel here that we do have $1 million for the study on our side, and God only knows how long it takes to develop these things and to build them, and now's the time to start looking at it. So we've got the Clear County delegation of about 17 members, and we're in full support of at least starting to look at this.
I guess your comments on the study, and then my question is that bondable? And I don't think anybody knows the answer to that, if we want to hear from finance on it, or if it has to be a general fund appropriation.
Well, Mr. Chair, that was not included in, as you're aware, in the governor's proposal. We're somewhat of an agnostic on the legislature will do it at will with that. That is an important or congested corridor. I understand Senator Metzen's concerns about that. I do need to add, it's not one of our transit. We have tier one transitways and tier two transitways, and right now that is not a part of that. Though I hasten to add, Senator Metzen makes good points about the importance of perhaps looking at that, but it is not part of the governor's request.
Into the question,
Chairman,
it is bondable.
Yeah, I would guess it would be, and I've had three or four discussions with the governor's office on this, and they're not saying no, and they're looking at it pretty hard for it, and as recently as this morning about 8:30, so it's on their radar screen, believe me.
We're hoping to get that list from the governor. I think we added up, but he's bigger than all three of ours.
He's a big spender. Okay.
Do we have other questions for our friends at the Met Council? Now, it occurs to me, we did. There was a study done, I think, on the Central Corridor at one time too. Was that not right, Captain Houseman? What was the cost of that? And anyone know?
We'll get an answer for you,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pat.
While we're waiting for the answer, we do have federal funds committed for the Central Corridor that we are needing to raise the match for. Is that correct, Mr. Bell?
The federal government, we have to submit our application to the feds. Yes, we do have the federal funds we need to get a match for, and we also have to submit our application for the Central Corridor. The Met Council has to submit that by the end of June.
By the end of June?
By the end of June, that's correct.
And how many dollars do you have to have committed then at that point?
Well, it depends on what the cost of the preliminary engineering is. Right now at the Central Corridor, the Central Corridor Coordinating Committee is going through a public hearing process to determine which mode they want to select, the mode being either a busway or a light rail. If, in fact, they select light rail, then it comes to the Met Council. We understand that that will be at the early part of June. We will then have to agree or disagree with what the Central Corridor Coordinating Committee states, and then that will largely determine what our request is to the FTA.
And you have to have that done by the end of June.
That's correct.
Of this year.
That's correct.
Okay. And if it is, and maybe they are, but I mean, I remember once being on the fourth session, being on an NPR program with Senator Cohen, and he was commenting that he hadn't heard anybody even talking about buses, and I said, geez, come over to our caucus, but, we got guys that are still talking about buses there, but every picture I see and everything I see, it looks like that's planned to be a light rail. Is that, let's just assume, for some crazy reason that it is light rail, what would that cost be, and then how many dollars do you have in place? I think that's kind of what Senator Pappas is trying to get at. We want to make sure you've got the dollars in place. Is that what you're saying, Senator?
The total cost, if it were real, is $800 and $40 million. The cost of the preliminary engineering, which is what would be requested, it goes to preliminary engineering, then the second phase is final design, and then the third, and then it's a full funding grant agreement. And do you know what the cost of the preliminary engineering is? Harley?
Let me get the details.
Central quarter cost, did we get
$340 total, but I want to get the cost of the preliminary engineering, which is the actual request that would be going into the feds in June.
Mr. Chairman, while we're waiting,
Senator Fatt,
while we're waiting, can you remind us what the projected ridership figures are for light rail on Central Corridor?
25 to 45 million, Mr. Chair, is the answer for the preliminary engineering. And again, that's 50% local, 50% federal is the cost of that.
Right. So you're going to have between 12.5 million and 20 million committed by the end of June.
That's correct. And we got 5.5 last year in the bonding bill, and then there will be money this year in the bonding bill. And both Hennepin and Ramsey County have given me, they're aware of their portion that they will have to pay of this. Essentially, it will be a two-thirds, one-third split of the half. This gets confusing, but of the part for the preliminary engineering, if that's pay half, we pay half. Then of our half, the state would pay essentially two-thirds, the locals would pay one-third. Ramsey County would pay 70% of their third, because the line is 70% in Ramsey County, and Hennepin County would pay about 30% of their third.
Okay, and so at the high end, you're saying it would be the state end, the local end would be $20 million, of which the state end of the half is, so we need to be at two-thirds of half.
It's right. It's about $22 million is at the high end. Okay. That's correct.
All right. And so if we do take the Senate number, which is what's before us today, you ought to be covered then.
We would be covered. That's correct. If we would need... we would really need we have 5.5, and then if we had the Senate has 5 in, that would, you know, be 10 or 10.5, and then the locals would have to come up with a third. So the real question is this: it's $22.5 million, and then the state would pay about two-thirds of the $22.5 million. That's the number that we need to get to.
And ridership? Ridership?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, about 34,000 riders a day.
How's that compared to the Hiawatha?
Hiawatha is at about 24,000.
Wow. So quite a bit. Huh, we built those in reverse order, but what do I know?
Hiawatha was slated to be about 19,000 riders.
Greg Clark, do you include the airport guys in that figure?
Oh, yeah.
From one terminal to the other?
The that's total ridership, yes. That's with going on, yeah.
Kind of the shuttle thing there.
Okay.
And then, did we get to the bottom of the study on the Central Corridor?
Mr. Chair, and
what a redesign, I guess we should say. Yep,
Judge Shedden with the Metropolitan Council. The study for the Central Corridor was $3 million. That was a DEIS, which is a draft environmental impact statement study that provides a lot more detail than what would be done on the Robert Street Corridor. There was a similar type of study that was done on the 35W Corridor that cost, I guess this was about 4 years ago or 3 years ago, that was $500,000, which would be similar to the Robert Street Corridor.
And Senator Metzen,
yes.
Do you know where the million-dollar figure for the Robert Street Corridor, where does that come from?
We've had some kind of committee meetings with a number of people, including Rafael Ortega, who is very involved in these issues, and I don't know exactly who he talked to, but maybe it was somebody from that council, I'm not sure, but somebody convinced at least him, and he convinced me that the million would handle the study. Not that the judge, did he talk to you, or did somebody talk to you guys about that million?
Mr. Chair, and
we didn't dream it up. I mean,
he talked to me personally. I'm sure he talked to somebody down at the council.
That's what I think.
I think you know, the $1 million would certainly cover it. We would potentially say that might be a little high, but we're definitely not taking a position against the study.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I just might add that I visited about this issue with the Representative Oberstar, and we had about a half an hour meeting, and I mean, he's pretty influential in that area out in D.C., and he said, you get this thing started here with this kind of money, and he indicated that he would try to really help on this, so. And then maybe it might get to Rochester someday.
Yeah,
there you go.
Senator Sedgwick, but like, he's sitting there, and it's far, right? We gotta dream a little bit, too, here, don't we?
I think before we eventually, you know, close the entire bill up, we'll probably have some more questions about, you know, that Robert Street Corridor. It was in the Senate bill, not in the House bill, and so, you know, we'll try to figure out where that request came from and if we can squeeze it in or not squeeze it in.
And Mr. Chair and members, the person who's really handling this is from Dakota County. His name is Dan Crom, and
yeah.
Dan can't be here today. He had surgery yesterday. I talked to him this morning, so. Okay, well, I'll let him know that the committee has additional questions for it, and I'll make sure he's available.
And Mr. Chair, I just want to close the circle. To do the study, the state's portion is going to be about $17 million, a little over five of which we have in hand from the last, I'm talking about for the Central Corridor, for preliminary engineering. The state's portion is going to be about $17.5 in hand now. The balance is what, and that's just for the state's portion now. That's not including the portion that's going to need to come from Hennepin and Ramsey County for the preliminary engineering. So we'll need about 17 for the state's portion. We've got 5.5 in hand now, and that's just the state's portion of the preliminary engineering. This is in referencing the application that's going to need to be submitted at the end of June.
So if it's at the high end 40. The local end is half.
The local end is half.
That's 20.
That's about 22. That's 45. So it's 22.
We're on the hook for two-thirds
and
of...
Seven, and it's, that's correct.
We're on the hook for two-thirds of...
22.
Two-thirds of 22.
And we have a 5.5. I just wanted to make sure that we were... A 5.25. 5.25.
Mr. Chair,
my math must not be okay. Go ahead.
No,
Mr.
Chair,
I understand you work for the governor, right?
That's correct.
That's correct. If you need that much money, why did he put in $2.5 million?
Well, first, when the bonding request was put together, the federal government had indicated that the initial review was a go. The governor has always said that he would be his decision. About which mode should be appropriate was going to be largely influenced by the federal government's willingness to put up 50% of the dollar. Their willingness, Senator, to put up 50% of the dollars is based upon the cost effectiveness of that line. The feds have indicated, they haven't said for certain, but they've indicated that the line would be cost effective with both rail and with a high-speed bus. And so with that, the governor has expressed some openness and receptivity to increasing the amount for Central. But that happened after we submitted our bonding request.
Great, thank you. Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I'm a little confused. I'm trying to follow all the different numbers. But one thing you said, Mr. Bell, is that you said, or maybe it was Mr. Shetland, I'm not sure which, on Central Corridor, you did a DEIS study, but that would not have to be done on Robert Street. And I'm just wondering what the difference is.
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, I'm actually going to ask Steve Morris, who is the project coordinator for the Central Corridor, to come down and answer that question for you.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Morris, work with the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority and the Metropolitan Council. The work that's being proposed here is more of a feasibility study, which is a very preliminary phase that kind of looks at whether or not the project might make sense. draft environmental impact statement is a far more comprehensive analysis looking at potential impacts of a project in a whole variety of areas. And that's why the cost differs. Similar studies have been done in other corridors in the region.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Morrison, so did I hear the estimate then with Robert Street is that it'll cost $1 million to find out whether the project makes sense, or am I just misunderstanding?
I am not that familiar with the origin of that $1 million figure, but certainly, yes, the feasibility study approach is to find out whether the project makes sense, and it makes sense to go to the next phases like a draft environmental impact statement.
Mr. Chairman.
And then, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question, Mr. Morrison. Did I hear correctly then that the 35W corridor, the same type of study to determine whether it made sense was about $500,000? Is that right? And then I'm also going to ask you a question about, ask them together, about the Cedar Avenue project and what that cost. Do you have any remembrance on that?
Mr. Morrison.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, I'm afraid I don't have the information on the Cedar Avenue corridor. I believe the earlier testimony was that it was $500,000 for the 35W corridor.
Well, Mr. Morris and Mr. Bell, if you could bring that information back when we come back, as Senator Metzen has brought up, we'd like to know some more about that as we talk about the Robert Street. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Bell, I just want to thank you for being here. We've been talking to another Mr. Bell over the last few days in tax committee, and I'm very pleased to see you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hope Ms. Peltola alerts the chair to this map as well. Though we often have the Central Corridor on the St. Paul list of projects, you will note that the line that shows the Central Corridor, where it says West State Avenue, that is where St. Paul ends. So you see this is actually a shared project between Minneapolis and St. Paul and between Ramsey County and Hennepin County. That's, in fact, I suspect it may even be the Hennepin County portion that may end up being the more expensive part of the line if there are a few more problems over there.
Representative Hausman, if I could ask you a question. Would the connections potentially to this go to the east, and to what communities may they go to?
I think that's a very good point to be made, that in fact this is this connects the East Metro, which subsequently would also be connected to the Red Rock Corridor coming up from
where does that get you to the Red Rock?
The Red Rock Corridor and the Rush Line from the north, which, we have Duluth in the room. The Rush Line is now working jointly with the Duluth area as they're proceeding to do some work. So we have very interesting connections, because what most people understand about transit is it will only become effective when, it serves the entire region. And it interrelates to our bus system, so that if you wanted, you could get along without a car.
Well, thank you, Representative Hausman. I think Senator Metzen and I both asked you what communities would be served by the Red Rock.
I think there are many fine communities to the south and the east.
The best one being Hastings, of course. Yeah.
Thank you, Senator.
Oh, yeah, I had to get that out. Yeah.
Is there anything more on Central Corridor? Because just to let everyone know, we are going to recess after Central Corridor until about 4:30, and then we'll be coming back. But I do want to continue with the Central Corridor discussion.
Mr. Chair, I want to
Mr. Bell.
Provide an answer to Representative Broad's question about the study that was done. Mr. Shetman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just to provide clarity to Representative Broad's questions about the cost of the scope, I need to correct myself regarding the 35W study. That was done within MnDOT's budget. They didn't come and seek an appropriation from the legislature to fund that study. The Cedar Avenue corridor study, scoping study, was done with a appropriation of $500,000 that they received from the legislature in 1998. And like I mentioned earlier, the study for the Robert Street Transway would be similar to
the needs of the $500,000 that was done for the Cedar Avenue Transit Way, but it is completely up to the legislature, and you guys to decide what that would be.
Thank you. Additional questions? Okay, we're going to recess until 4:30.
Senator, we all right? I didn't wait. He's on red there. I forgot to give him the signal before I dropped the hammer. I think he's talking to Knobloch right there. He's got him on the line. And
special phone, huh, for Knobloch?
Special phone right to the committee, to the congressional campaign.
Mr. Chairman, would we have a direct line right to the speaker then so we could figure out what the targets would do then?
You could. I'm sure we probably have to go right through congressional candidate Pinky. Congressional candidate Knobloch. I forget. Or Ellison, maybe he could do. Well, we've got two House members.
That's good enough.
That's good. That's really good enough, isn't it? All right. So we will commence. So when we last left, we had made a proposal of things, the low-hanging fruit as they were, and the Senate requested, and I thought it was very appropriate to have a little time to evaluate that suggestion, and so we're back, and what'd you all think, Senator?
Well, it's good. It's, let's say, 99% good. And obviously, it's going to, the first couple, 3 days is going to be a little easier as we go with the things that are fairly, we got a lot of things in common on, and as we start grinding up over $1 billion, then it's going to start getting a little tougher.
I agree.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to move this position that we do that, and it doesn't say we don't come back and add more to it, or if we change something else, and hopefully we'll find a House member to do that.
Yeah, we'll kick some of these guys off, Mary, that don't want to be on the committee, and
sub in Representative Murphy.
Ray, could you go find a member, maybe? See if they're...
We'll see how the congressional campaign is coming up there. And
what are they doing?
Mr. Chair, I just need some clarification on what it is you're actually moving.
I would move the positions that are on the handout that you have that says proposal.
So, Mr. Chair, we've heard about the higher education proposals, but some of these others, I look at the proposal line and I see DNR proposals. And
the DNR proposal, we did chat about briefly. I think that, you know, unless you have some specific questions, neither Senator Langseth nor I have had questions in that area. It's just simply the flood mitigation part of it only, Senator Scoble. I tried to pick the most non-controversial.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going through it. And again, I want to compliment you for bringing forward a proposal. I think that's positive. But like we haven't heard on the employment and economic development portion, the wastewater and
water. You know what? At this point, we didn't skip over that. We should talk about that. And again, unless you want to hear from somebody, I don't know if Mr. Coolman's out there somewhere. Yes, he is. He's in the back if you have any specific questions. But in some of the preliminary meetings that I had with Senator Langseth, he had indicated that he liked our number. And so that's how I arrived at it. It wasn't exactly a lot of additional rocket science. I think that the number that we have before us is significantly stronger than the governor's, and I think does a extremely good job of going pretty far down the wastewater infrastructure list that the PFA puts together. But I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you might have, since we still need another member, or if you'd like to hear from Mr. Coleman from the PFA, we can certainly bring him down. He's sort of meandering. You may as well meander down. We try to find somebody to...
We
did recess. We didn't announce we were quitting or anything. All right, then. I snuck out early. I didn't know if McNamara canceled the meeting or what he did. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and help us stall.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Terry Cohen. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority. If there's any questions, I'd gladly respond. You do have the governor's recommendation, and both House and Senate were consistent on the state match for both drinking water and wastewater. Appreciate that. The governor recommended $15 million for WIF, and both houses, I think, are real close. I think the only exception is probably Ascoff, which is kind of a unique situation, and that's why the House is a little higher than the Senate. So. Okay, but any questions, I'd gladly respond to them.
Is it good?
Yeah. I think so.
I don't know.
I mean, there's some language tweaking, inconsistencies, things like that. But
oh, we have at least one member back from the Congressional Campaign Office.
We can definitely work with staff and see where you want to go on the differences in language are pretty minimal.
Great. Okey-doke. Representative Houseman, did you have a question?
Well, just that for the committee, this has been an education for me. We toured only one that we thought was really, really kind of a pathetic project, and I mean in its condition, and we discover that it's not nearly the worst because there are so many before it, and so it's been an eye-opener for me to understand the huge need out there and really the difficult circumstances that a lot of these local areas are in.
And how?
Now, that loan, Mr. Chair, that loan program is a one-for-one match, right? So $32 million becomes $64
million? That's correct, Mr. Chair, and we leverage that with our revenue bonds another two times, so we're talking well into the $100 million.
Oh, I see.
Range of construction. So.
Okay, it would be just on the loan program, it's over $100 million?
Yes, our target, we're probably going to shoot with this fund for about $140 to $150 the next 2 years.
Oh, okay.
So,
part of that is federal money that's matching, but
correct.
Also PFA?
The federal funds will be matched one-to-one on the wastewater side, which is $32 million, and then the other is one-to-five matched on the drinking water side.
The
demand for drinking water isn't quite as high as it is on wastewater.
Okay. Fair enough. Are there other questions that members have about the deed portion of this proposal or the
that $300,000 general fund, was that administrative or something?
Yes, here it does need to be general fund money, and that does cover administrative costs, and it's really all the permitting, engineering review, maintaining the lifts, kind of the technical assistance type stuff, most of which isn't bond eligible when you help the real small communities. Some is, but not all.
We took it out of our bill center line, so because congressional candidate Nadlock felt that it was bondable, and rather than deal with him over $300,000, we just figured we'd straighten her out here. Senator Scoville, please.
Mr. Chairman, I need somebody to explain to me what the maximum daily load, LOAD grants. The House was at five, and the Senate was at, the House was at $3 million.
Right.
The House was at $5 million. And how that relates to the wastewater infrastructure, if somebody can explain to me how that all works together.
I'll give a little bit of a shot, and then what I'm off on, Mr. Coleman, if you'd cover for me, but the TMDL grants would be grants to cities to help them with their costs as the federal government passes on regulations and the state passes on regulations to our cities about the discharge, their total maximum daily load that they put out. And I think
you know, this is kind of a small number in both bills, I think, relative to the need out there, and I think you're going to see this fund in future bonding years grow to be rather large. We had a small appropriation last year, $2 or $3 million maybe, which none has been spent, but I think Mr. Coleman, the list of eligible projects that has recently come out, and we made a little bit of language change, but could you give us some size magnitude on that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Fogan. I'm glad you brought it up, because early in the session I've talked to several people and I said we simply didn't have a list of cities or communities eligible for totally daily maximum load grants, and it is a 50% grant program. When a total daily maximum load plan is approved by US EPA, that is, the water's been impaired, what pollutes that water has been identified, and the allocation plan is in place, so you know where the pollutants need to be reduced, whether it be septic, feedlots, municipal wastewater. The TMDL grant program is designed to go in and provide 50% grant cost to address the specific pollutant. So if a water is impaired because of phosphorus, we could do a 50% grant phosphorus removal in those communities. There have been several TMDLs approved, Lower Minnesota River with Fecal-Coliform, Minnesota River with turbidity or suspended solids and phosphorus, and that list tends to be 3.5 pages of fine print needs there. I anticipate that program to grow quite a bit. And it is different than the Wastewater Infrastructure Fund, or WIF, because the WIF is tied to two loan programs, one at the federal level through USDA Rural Development, where we match their grant calculation. If a city takes out a loan, we match their grant 50-50 so we can use the federal funds. And then when the project cost gets real high on the EPA wastewater project, when it exceeds 5% of market value in the community, we use WIF to write down the cost and spread the term out over 40 years. So that's kind of a gap financing tool versus an outright flat percentage grant program.
Ms. Senator Langseth, please.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Coleman, how much money could we give you, could we have given you, and you still get it out and get it working? Any idea?
Mr. Coleman.
Real good question, Mr. Chair, and committee members. On the loan side, we could probably double what easily and still have a demand. I think the WIF, given this year, there's also a different uniqueness in this year. We're trying to do two different lists. PCA's phased out the priority list, the old priority list, and has changed their priorities to a new priority list. We're trying to use both less, so the demand is a little heavier. On the WIF program, initially we thought $15 million would be good. $20 million goes further down that list. We could be short another somewhat, given that we're running both lists. But I think in a normal year, $20 million in a bonding year would get us the WIF need. The loan demand, we could probably do $300 million a year easily in loans, which means the state and federal combination would probably be in the $75 to $100 million, and we can leverage the rest with revenue bonds, if that answers your question. Talking lots of money, there's a lot of demand out there. We have a list that exceeds $1.6 billion. And we anticipate, with the TMDL issue, impaired water issue, coming about, have another $1 million added to that list over the next 10 years. Not to mention new projects that come aboard. A lot of money.
Other questions of Mr. Coleman, members? Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Senator Spogel or others, did you have questions about any other parts of this proposal?
Mr. Chair, I would say there may be some changes, like we were talking about the Central Corridor, for example. There might be some extra money come up there and so on. So obviously that's open to do some more in the future.
Mr. Chairman
And Senator Lang says, I talked again to the Met Council, and it looks like the bottom line we would need for the Central Corridor in this bill would be $4 million. And then to authorize that the extra funds, the $7.8 million from the bus barn sale, would be transferred to the Central Corridor. That's what the Met Council governor requested.
And so I think in this proposal, was it $5
million? Yeah. So actually, I just saved you $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I could spend
but
it.
I tell you where I want to spend it.
why don't we reduce that, mm-hmm. or amend that motion and reduce that line?
We could put
to $4 million.
But again, you know,
and they come screaming in tomorrow and saying that was the right number.
I don't know when you have spoken to them, Senator Pappas, but I would suggest we not do
right.
anything there because
let's,
that,
we can always spend less
that
later.
Doesn't sound like the most up-to-date.
Let's go slow.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Scoble.
Sure. We heard Mr. Bell talk about the need for the $3.3 million for the 46th Street Station if we're going to do anything. And that there's savings to be had by doing it at the same time that the crosstown I-35W connection is being made. Otherwise, it will cost more. So, and I assume he speaks for the administration when he speaks, and so I think we ought to be looking at his request.
I guess I don't serve on transportation. Representative Houseman, I don't know enough about that project to speak. You know, that seems to be what he said, but you know, I wish there was.
I was just looking to see if they were still here, but
there you go.
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm hesitant about. I wish I understood the other half of that better than I do. So I guess I would either let's either leave it out or include the whole thing. I think there's some people feel pretty strongly about that park and ride. I think that's the other half of the park and ride.
Okay, I see.
And I don't. Is there any for the Met Council guys?
Mr. Chair, it sounds like there's things that we still need to learn about the Metropolitan Council's transportation proposals,
right.
And I don't think we're ready to act on those.
Right. Certain.
No.
On any of it, you want to not act on any of it?
Well, Mr. Chair, I certainly do not have enough information to vote on the Met Council proposals.
Especially Representative Houseman and I.
Right, Representative Houseman.
And, Chairman, I want to compliment you for coming forward with a proposal because I think that's meritorious and. But sometimes sleeping on things helps. And
Mr. Chair, was it your
still $500 million worth of spending
to finalize things, or what was your intention to do?
I would have thought we could have whatever we can get in agreement on, and if there's some question about some of those items and folks want more information before we do that particular section.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
I apologize for coming in a few minutes late. Did you already talk about the road money?
We did not.
Okay, then I just had a concern just in terms of metro rural balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, frankly, both the House and the Senate bills are pretty oriented rural, you know, so by some counts, kind of 2-1. So I want to make sure that the metro area is being treated fairly in the conference committee. And if you look at the Department of Transportation, you know, it looks to me like in our bill, at least if you take the top of it, we put $60 million toward North Star, and that's, you know, arguably both metro and rural. But we'll count it as metro. And then we have 47 and 10 for local bridge replacement, local road improvements. And I don't know how much of that. I assume most of it is rural, but some of it could be metro. That looks kind of balanced. But in your House bill and in your proposal, it's 55. It's kind of 75 with the the bridge and the road improvements and 60 with North Star. So it does seem to me to be a little unbalanced there.
Couple things. I don't know if Ms. Lovell from the counties or who wants to talk about that, this is in the DOT, but a couple things. Don't forget you're talking about in the next line down some transit projects that I think are metropolitan based. The road money, half of it is in the railroad safety account, which includes every county in the state. I guess I don't know specifically about Ramsey. I would assume you still have some rural roads. I know Hennepin.
There might be.
I know Hennepin County still does, and so I don't know what the split of it is. My sense on the bridge money, probably 70-30, but I'm winging it. I don't know if anybody wants to come down and.
Well, and everybody wants to have good bridges as we drive around the state.
Right. The other thing I'd say is, you know, probably depends on who you ask to do the split. And we asked the nonpartisan staff to give us a rundown of how they saw it. They saw it about a third metro, a third greater Minnesota, and a third statewide, because some of it gets to be hard to ring up against somebody else. You know, from a rural perspective, we get rung up with the WMAs, and yet most of the pressure for WMAs comes from folks, frankly, that are in the suburbs. And so,
WMA?
Wildlife Management Area. And so some of that gets to be how do you assign that? How do you assign state parks? They're located outside the metropolitan area, but 75% of the people that use them are from the metropolitan area. So
Mr. Chairman, you could use the same thing with metro resources. A lot of people come from rural Minnesota to go to the zoos.
Yeah. And that's why I get very cautious about
Ordway to go to the Twins game.
I get very cautious about trying to say it's one way or the other. It's just
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Gray with MnDOT, Chief Financial Officer. I just wanted to give a little perspective to Senator Pappas' comments about the local bridge accounts, and particularly the bridge replacement and the local road improvement grants. The counties and cities have a very structured system and steering board that reviews all these statewide, and both the bridge and local road improvement programs do impact the metro area and greater Minnesota. I can't give you a specific percentage, and I think it is needs-driven, so it does vary from year to year, but there's very balanced in terms of the needs and perspectives of all 87 counties and 135 cities. With respect to North Star Commuter Rail, obviously that is bridges both greater Minnesota and the metro area. The other common elements that are in there are the Rail Service Improvement Program, which is primarily short line haulers outside of but up to the metro area. Port development of the five public ports, two of them are in the metro area. So I think you do get not necessarily a 50-50 split per se, but you do get the representative needs addressed through the port association, through the county and city steering teams that allocate the funds based on needs and have a pretty good and tight and respected process for looking at how the monies are distributed. So I think it is spread pretty much over the state, but from year to year it probably varies who's to gets which amounts. And there might be in the bridge program a slightly disproportionate share that are in greater Minnesota versus metro, but there are bridge replacement projects in the metro area as well.
Thank you. The only thing I'll provide probably at one of the next meetings, I think it's an interesting way to look at it. State economist, his name's Stinson, and another guy did some work for a rural policy group, and they divided the state rather than just rural metro, but they divided it into called different plexes. You have the metroplex, that's kind of that St. Cloud. Everybody talks about St. Cloud, the metropolitan area down to Rochester, then divided the rest of the state up based on common interests. And it's kind of interesting when you do that analysis on this bill. It's probably no surprise that the majority of the money is spent in that area. But there's also a lot of components to this bill that are based on the geographic size of the state and not population distribution as well. Do you have other questions on roads or bridges? I didn't see the...
Not really.
People must not have thought we were coming back. They don't see the county people either. So.
Yeah.
Representative Hausman, I think, what are you thinking on this Met Council stuff?
I'm just assuming, I guess I would be interested to know, are you actually thinking that we would vote on things and take positions today because I suspect they're still working to fine-tune after questions today and other issues. So, you know, I think my preference would be that we not put anything in concrete yet on this particular.
On the Met Council.
Yeah.
And I think I'm comfortable with that because then we can solve that that bus deal. We can get the whatever the proper number is for the Cedar Avenue. You know, we still need to do it. We just need, or the central line. We need to figure out what that is. I'm comfortable leaving that section aside and coming back to it.
Yeah.
Senator Pat.
Mr. Chairman, I do have another question. In the employment and economic development section, I know we talked about the wastewater infrastructure. Was it your intention that the conference adopts the three items? Were you intending to drop the rest of the box, or you just felt like we could move ahead on these?
Not at all.
You're not dropping anything?
No, not at all, because I think that, which going back to my earlier highlights, if you would just, when you look at the things that are common in the bill, or if you just assign a dollar amount to the category, maybe you don't know where the DNR stuff's going to end up, but you know you're going to put more money in there. You put more money in the deed area, and this bill is going to get it to $800 million, I think, in a real hurry.
Okay. Then I have a question, Mr. Chairman. Sure. On the Greater Minnesota Business, I don't know this area very well. I don't serve on this committee. But there's two items. It says Greater Minnesota Business Development, and you had 15.8 and we had 10. And then Redevelopment Grant, you had 15 and we had 10. Am I to assume that the Greater Minnesota Business Development is obviously Greater Minnesota, and then the redevelopment grants are Metro?
I think in our bill that would be a correct assumption to make. I think in the Senate bill, if I understood what Senator Lanx's staff told me the other day, that you would still have those both being Greater Minnesota programs. So in our bill, it's a 50-50 split. And you know, I believe in the Senate bill, it's still all 100%. Last year, we were going to change it to 50-50, and then you may recall that need for the Medtronic money came up at the end, and so it seemed that if Medtronic was, or again, that the metropolitan area was going to get 15 or 18 million, that we ought to have some type of equity for it. And so I guess in the House bill, we've made that a statewide program again. That's why you don't see anything in there yet, because I think those are, I don't think they'll be overly controversial, but I don't think it was quite as clean as the WIF numbers.
So, Mr. Chairman, are these two programs serving different purposes? Because they seem a little redundant when you have a Greater Minnesota Business Development and then you have a redevelopment grant that's also at least half Greater Minnesota.
They do serve different needs in different types of programs. I'm looking for a deed person. Oh, Mr. Coleman will sub in.
Again, I'm just trying to make sure we have some balancing.
I'm not sure. And you realize, I mean, we're not trying to solve that unless you want to make a...
No, I understand. Okay. It's all just right. What's on the list.
Yeah.
So
if the question is, what's the difference between the Greater Minnesota Business Development Program and then the redevelopment and then the department's position on whether it should be a statewide program split 50-50?
Are those programs different?
Okay. The Greater Minnesota Business Development Program, I believe, has a cap of $500,000. It's really for industrial parks. You know, we get a lot of applications. The department gets a lot of applications for sewer line expansion and, 10-ton roads, so they have a business expansion opportunity. Some of the regional centers around the state have their industrial parks are full, so they're looking at utilities or infrastructure going into other lands, so they've got space available. Very competitive program, a lot of demand for it, and it really fits a nice niche. So I believe most last year when in the bonding bill they had the money allocated the month after first month of the fiscal year, quite a demand and a lot of good projects.
Mm-hmm.
Real basic. The redevelopment program really is initially, I hate to say it because I lobbied for this program in the early days, and it was a statewide program and it was split. There was a formula so much for Metro, so much for outstate, and then there was a little balance so you could finish off a project or two. in one or the other. Mm-hmm. And then under Ventura, he wanted the Met Council to take over the redevelopment that Deed was doing and then let the Greater Minnesota rest in Deed, and I think he vetoed both of them. So now we're trying to go back because it's not a big issue with Met Council anymore, but it still is a big issue with cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, especially, and even some of the first ring suburbs where their land is pretty much totally developed. So when you have blighted areas, you've got resources to go and clean it up and get it development ready. The same is true in outstate. A lot of communities have sites where, you know, if they clean up, they can get development within the city limits where the utilities are. If they don't do it, it's cheaper to go take a couple acres out of a cornfield, you know, just run utilities because it's cheaper to do that than it is to tear down a building. So the redevelopment program is really needed in statewide. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Cohen. Appreciate that.
Do members have other questions? Well, then I think I will re-amend the motion that we adopt the provisions in the offer with the exception of the Met Council, and not that we don't like them, but just until we come back and figure out what the proper numbers are, if I understand that.
I don't know. I think some of my companies feel a little uncomfortable about adopting something. Obviously, we looked this over and it looked like, you know, 99% of this is going to be in there, probably all of it. But
and that kind of goes back to why I thought it's kind of difficult to meet until the speaker gives me a target, and you know, so we're sort of back there again. And I guess we can.
Well, I think we can build on a bill here, but I don't think we necessarily need to move. Because we might find that as we squeeze towards the end, we might have to go back, you know, agreeing to go back and do a few things just to squeeze something in. So not that you couldn't do that if you've made a motion. Obviously, it's all kind of good, to a certain degree.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just a little concerned about some of the higher ed projects we've been talking about, some of the Minsky projects, and we may have I think we will have kind of a counter offer that kind of tweaks some of that a little bit tomorrow.
Senator Scobin.
And Mr. Chairman, you heard my comments earlier about the science teaching building. I think we need to be looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I
we're prepared to vote on the House side and adopt these, and I guess if you know, you want to vote no, that's all right too, and we can do that. Somehow do it, you know, in another way. That's all right. But I think that, you know, from a House standpoint, we feel pretty comfortable with this. And if you don't, that's all right too. You know, I think that's part of the difficulty of operating without a target.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would really prefer we don't have a vote because I don't think my countries are quite ready to go with it yet. And we don't want to come across as negative because we looked it over and we really aren't negative.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a good start.
We are going to, from our standpoint, we're going to vote. And if you want to vote no, that's all right.
Okay.
Questions before we vote? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Was opposed?
No.
I think we have a not a winner yet.
That wasn't negative. It was just we're not.
Well, I think though. I think that it. I mean, I'm going to view it that way. Is that it is that we're not ready to. You know, I think that these proposals have been out here for.
Didn't last very long, did it?
Yeah, these proposals have been out here. I think for. I don't know how long, and you know, I don't know what you're looking for, and I think it's a good faith effort, and I keep hearing, I saw some comments Senator Scoglin made in the newspaper that somehow we were stalling, so we're here ready to vote, and all of a sudden you're not ready. So I guess it's kind of hard to read those comments, and then when we come ready to work, and you're not ready. So
that's
hard to be, it's hard to see that as, well, should we recess?
No.
Why don't we recess again? I think we have a gamble. We'll recess until 7 o'clock and see if you can come up with something different then. I'm certainly happy to do that.
No, wait a minute. Tomorrow we will have the gavel.
And we will come up with a proposal. We won't expect you to vote on it, but we'll try to build on what you've done. What you've done, I think, is, like I say, 99% fine. But I just don't quite understand the need to vote at this point. And I think my contemporaries feel pretty strongly about that. But we don't feel it's negative. I'm sorry, you
do. I'm sure you don't.
We don't feel it's negative. Right. It wasn't a negative vote. It's just, right.
Well, I hope we don't have to go back and talk, but I suppose maybe we'll maybe go back and say we don't feel like doing anything until we get a target. And we're back to not moving forward. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you made a good start.
I do.
We'd like to build on it, and we won't ask you for a vote.
We'll stand in recess until 7 o'clock, and you come back and see if you can modify it. Committee's in recess.
Hoffman and I were driving around downtown St. Paul trying to round up senators, but we heard they were down there somewhere, but we couldn't find them.
Where are they?
They didn't invite me. Boy. I would say that on a bipartisan basis, the House convenees ate with their staff members. So I don't know if they're punishing you. Or...
I asked Keith if the committee was picking up dinner in response.
Become a House member, House staff person.
I was.
Well, we'll reconvene. I apologize for being a little bit late. We snuck out and got a bite to eat, and in a bipartisan fashion, Representative Hausman and I went for a motorcycle ride, and we went downtown because we heard the senators were down there eating and thought we'd round them up, and we couldn't get them to come out of the restaurants. And so we'll wait a little longer, but I don't think they're coming back. I think despite the comments that I read in the newspaper about the House dragging its feet and being a problematic, I don't see him over there. We're here, ready to work. We made what we thought should have been kind of a non-controversial offer. I think it was the easy part of the bill. Certainly we're willing to, drop the provisions that people had questions about in the area of the transit in the Met Council. And unfortunately, I got a feeling we're not all somewhere working on an offer.
Are we on TV?
Probably not. I don't know. That's an enormous.
Well, I was just going to ask you that question. And technical question, since you have the gavel, and we're in recess now.
We're back from recess. We could recess again and see if that helped.
I just wondered how long that recess can last. Could it last till tomorrow?
Well, I think at midnight, I'm not the Robert Bird of the body for certain, but I think at the end of the legislative day, whenever that rules to be, then it would become the Senate's.
Okay.
And then we'll have to chat a little bit. I thought about it. I guess my initial response was I could be petty and play the same game and not come back. I won't show up tomorrow to your meeting, but.
But we're above that.
We're House members, and so we eat with us. They didn't take their staff to eat with them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe he has the authority to set targets.
That's it. Maybe he's meeting with the speaker. Maybe Senator Lang, do we know the speaker? Maybe Senator Lang's with you? No. Well, what else are we going to do? You didn't see him coming in the back door there, did you, Nancy?
Did you find them?
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell everyone we did try to find them?
We did. I told him we were on the motorcycle trying to find them in a very bipartisan fashion. Alice was driving, too. You ought to see her drive that Harley. It's amazing.
Are there any bugs out this time of the night? This time?
None. Beautiful night. Down. We drove by. We didn't see anybody from the Harrison Keeler crowd, but we did, kind of. Looked that over too, but thinking maybe the senators were down there. Maybe they went to the premiere of Prairie Home Companion, but turns out they weren't there, so we don't know. We looked for them and couldn't find them, but it doesn't appear that they're in the state office building. So, anybody have any suggestions or any comments they wish to make? Anyone want to come down and testify about anything in the bill or out of the bill? Representative Broad, is that a well? Did you?
Well, no, Mr. Chairman, I thought there was some strategy that was used to find legislators and governors missing in action under the Ventura years, and maybe we should go back and take some lessons learned from that.
I don't know what the rule is on conference committees if you can compel them to.
There's no call.
You have a testifier. Looks familiar.
You call up the conference.
Mr. Chair, I bet if we asked Representative Rugavina, he would tell us how to make milk cartons.
We could make milk cartons with the senators' faces on them. Come here, what are the senators?
Not in control.
There's a senator. All right. You should, let's get on that milk carton thing. Did that work? Did Fontage work? No? Okay. Well. I was going to move the whole House position, to, or the whole Senate position, but. Can't do that either now.
Senate position.
I thought we'd just move the Senate position.
Chair,
I
would move the Senate position.
All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
There wasn't three votes on the Senate side for the. Matter of fact, is it. Let it be noted there was not three votes from the Senate side for the Senate provisions. So apparently they're not supporting their own bill.
I think we should go.
Anyone else have any comments? Oh, Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, since we're not quite clear on the rules, I think that you should have another opportunity at the gavel. And until we're sure that the carriage turns into a pumpkin at midnight, I would respectfully suggest that we recess rather than adjourn and test the waters.
Well, then we will recess to the call of the chair.
Don't call too early.
Yeah. So,
Mr. Chair,
I think I'd go home if I were you guys.
Yeah,
I just wanted to say that
I am off the hammering.
See us conclude our portion of this legislative session by the 17th of May.
I certainly hope so. You know, and that was kind of. I wasn't sure why we met without a target, but some people thought that was a. Have you seen. There's Don Davis. Don, have you seen any senators? We've only rounded up Senjan. Any sightings of them? We're looking. Representative Broad.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've been reading the great writings of Mr. Davis, and I think I remember a quote in there from Senator Johnson, and maybe just Mr. Davis can correct me if I'm wrong, something about they're waiting for the House. And it certainly appears tonight that we're waiting for the Senate. And then I also remember something written by Mr. Davis, too, that Senator Langseth said that they are here to help the House melt down. And I think this is clear proof that the House is not melting down, and the Senate is clearly not helping. Mr. Davis, thank you.
Except for Senjum. Senjum, we want it noted that Senator Senjum,
give me proper credit.
He showed up. And Davis used to write for the Rochester newspaper.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we will officially recess to the not quite yet, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the anticipation is, if I remember the rules right, that potentially if we do recess and it goes past midnight and we don't come back, that then the gavel will belong to Senator Langseth. And did it seem to you like he talked? I thought I heard him say the word tomorrow. I know he's not here to say, but I thought it sounded like he maybe thought we were going to meet tomorrow, and he wasn't sure on time. As a matter of fact, now I do remember, I talked to him in the back there. There was some question about the timing. I'm trying to remember. He had something else going on.
I think they got a stadium or two to talk. Are they doing that on the floor tomorrow?
Are
you guys doing a stadium tomorrow? No.
I think he said, I'm trying to remember, Mr. Chair, he talked about 2 o'clock, and then he did mention something about the morning. I can't remember what they had going on, but I think it was his intention from the sound of it to be tomorrow.
We'll call on the staff showed up.
For the record, Jess Myers, the Senate Majority Research.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad you're here.
Good to be here. Tomorrow on the Senate floor, they're taking up the supplemental budget bill, I believe, and then after the adjournment of session, there's a Senate Finance Committee meeting. Senator Langseth, I think, was planning to call a conference committee after the Finance Committee meeting.
After the Finance Committee, so. We go in at 10 o'clock, and I got a sneaking suspicion I'll probably make one or two comments about today's festivities and suggest that, you know, we're in recess waiting to hear
tomorrow there'll be probably, I don't know how long the House will be in session, but it's the day of prayer.
I'm not sure. I didn't hear from the majority leader if tomorrow we're doing bills that are having a chance to come into law, or if we've got bills we're going to sit around yak for hours and hours that have no chance of becoming law. That takes a lot longer. So if it's one of the days when we're doing bills that have a chance of becoming law, we shouldn't be there long.
I think these are the ones that could become law.
That'd be good. You know, and I think it'd be helpful. I wasn't in the Navy, but if you had like one of those flags, you could, you know, send up flags and you'd know what the signal was, then we could all come on the floor. Because I told the majority leader when I said, could you let me know when we're doing the stuff that could become law, because then I won't do my email or actually pay attention. And then when we're doing the stuff that is for seemingly political reasons or other reasons, then I can do my email and, you know, shop on the internet or whatever. Okay, Evelyn Braun.
We will have tech committee tomorrow too, I'm sure. So just timing wise, we'll be jumping back and forth. And
I'm sure that since we had a caucus before we unveiled the bonding bill, I'm still waiting for that caucus on that tax bill. But
Mr. Chairman,
maybe that'll be. You're on the Al Qaeda board too. We should ask you what's up with that.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the tax committee is meeting right now over dinner, and they may be finding the senators somewhere too.
Maybe they're having that. Could be it. He's Langsef and Creaky are cutting the deal and getting the target.
Well, whoever can cut a target.
I can't do it. So all right, we've had enough of this wittiness, or lack thereof. See, these people are polite. They laugh even though it's not that funny.
Somebody's holding a pen.
If the bill was done, it would be, they'd be out of here, so I don't blame them. All right, with that, we stand in recess to the call of the chair. Thanks for coming. Sorry. Now look at his leadership staff. During Senate leadership staff, we've got House leadership. We were just talking, do you know, on the floor tomorrow, are we doing bills that could become law, or are we doing the bills that have no chance of becoming law? Oh, then it could be a long day.